Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week marks the beginning of carnival season, albeit a vastly different one. A new book, I Want to Do That, The Magic of Mardi Gras Marching Cruise, celebrates that carnival spirit. We're talking with Echo Olander and Yanni Goldstein, creators of the text, and Patrick Nidry, who took the photos with Ryan Hodgson Rigsby. Carnival season 2021 is here, and though we're not hitting the streets quite yet, we can dream. A new book, I Want to Do That, The Magic of Mardi Gras Marching Cruise, celebrates the carnival spirit of innovation and celebration. It's a pleasure to welcome Echo Olander, longtime arts educator, and writer Yanni Goldstein, creators of the text for this book. Patrick Nidry, who took the photos with Ryan Hodgson Rigsby, joins us later. Welcome, Echo. Yanni, it's great to talk with you, too.
Yeah, it's so great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Echo, you're an experienced arts administrator after all your years with KidSmart, so you're always looking for public connection with the arts. Was that the root of this book for you?
We were really excited by the proliferation of the different marching crews, and it just seemed like one day we woke up and there were so many of them, and was just created a curiosity for both of us.
And how did you work together? What was the great inspiration that you two were meant to do this book at the same time?
Well, it turned into something really special once COVID happened and we couldn't actually be in the same place at the same time. But a lot of the work is done digitally anyway, so the picture sorting and different kinds of things happened over a digital format. But as we got together and thinking about how to categorize the crews, we did that when we were still together in the same room.
Well, you were actually at a parade when you thought of this, weren't you?
We were. We were watching the Orpheus parade on Lundi Gras, and one of the crews walked by, and it sparked a conversation about how many crews there are now, how amazing they are, how much time people put into them. It's one aspect of carnival that we both really are in love with, and sparked the conversation.
And the other great thing is that it's public art where everyone can participate and find some sort of niche for their talents.
Absolutely. I myself dress up every year and participate in parades, so I know what it's like to wait in line at Jefferson Variety in October to get some particular fabric that I just have to complete the costume. We live it as well, and we understand the motivation that would cause somebody to spend hours and dollars to be able to participate in the carnival.
So you came up with 300 different groups. So talk about gathering all that information.
So my day job is project manager, and I live in spreadsheet land. So we approximated that in the physical world by writing all the crews that we could possibly think of on 3x5 index cards, spreading them out on Echo's Kitchen Island, and shuffling them around into different categories until we wrangled them into some semblance of order.
And there are so many of them, it's really impressive to see the information you've gathered.
Thank you. A team effort.
Well, the index at the back is like endless, and it's so much fun to read.
I have to give credit to my wife, who spent a lot of time tracking down some of that information.
Now, one of the things that you stress in this book is the fact that the work of these groups goes on all year. And we all know how hard the Mardi Gras Indians work on their suits, but give us some of the more unusual examples. I know that I often drive home past Lyons Avenue and I'll see dancing groups on the neutral ground.
The crews have a really exhaustive carnival season, and so usually they take a little bit of time off and then start getting back into their work. And we were really impressed by the philanthropic side that many of these groups have. So in their off-season, not parading time, they're often performing at fundraisers or raising money themselves or doing different kinds of things. So they have, they, many of them do have a year-round presence, and almost all of them begin their work in the fall for February marching season.
Well, I always know that in the fall, there's a time you get the glitter out and start working on shoes. I mean, you know, you can't do that stuff at the last minute. And think of those T-Rex floats and throws that are so tiny and you know, handcrafted. The thing I love about Mardi Gras the most is that it's something we make happen. It has a devotional quality. People take it on. It's a practice in a way, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the least known aspects of Mardi Gras outside of New Orleans. People around the country have a particular notion in their heads of what Mardi Gras is. And one of the things that I personally was hoping to achieve with this book was to sort of show people outside what really goes on here and how family-friendly it is, how creative it is. It's not just a debauchery on Bourbon Street that people tend to associate with Mardi Gras.
Now, do the two of you belong to any marching groups?
The two of us do not. I march with St. Anne's every year on Mardi Gras Day, but we are not formally in crews. Our photographer, Ryan, is a member of Red Beans.
Oh, Red Beans is fun. I mean, I love it. Well, that's another thing. When you write about the crew of Red Beans, you analyze the secret of their success, and it came from very strict guidelines that they would have only 150 people, two bands, and they'd walk 3 miles.
Devin DeWolf is the genius at that kind of thing. He's just really figured out how to make it a community event, not a big mega Mardi Gras, but it's in the community that they're marching in, and the people are neighbors, and it's really about the size. Keeping it a small size makes it more in tune with the neighborhood.
Right. And it's all the work of such a joyful spirit. I mean, I love that quotation from Michael Tisserand when he talks about how people only see you for 15 seconds, so you better make it good, you know?
Yeah, it's a performative thing. You know, that's one of our definitions of that people are actually really performing while they do this.
If the Lazy Boys would open up their membership, that is the crew that I would, that's my dream crew to join.
It's pretty great, isn't it? Those chairs. I mean,
that is my dream crew. Unfortunately, they have a closed membership list and are not accepting new applicants.
So, do you think that there's room for more crews?
Absolutely. I do think that there's room for more. We estimate that there's roughly 10,000 people that participate out of a population of several hundred thousand. I think there's definitely room for more.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Echo Olander and Yanni Goldstein about their book, I Want to Do That, The Magic of Mardi Gras Marching Crews. One of the great things about this book is that in the back, you do have this informative section for people who might want to start a crew.
Yeah, we thought about it as being an advice column.
Right.
Because it was so interesting in talking to all the different people. That was one of the questions we asked everyone was like, if somebody was trying to do this, what would you suggest to them? And fascinating 180-degree answers from various crew members that were so charming and funny, just like the people who are doing all this stuff.
Well, I love that Devin DeWolf said, rent a storage unit and budget for it. And my other favorite one was, don't take yourself too seriously. At this point, we're 40 to 50-year-old women in majorette costumes.
Yeah, you know, it can slide into being super serious, and most of the people were really about, this is fun, this is joyous, you have to keep it that way. And while you need a lot of organization and management of this, it's fun.
First and foremost, it's fun. So have you heard from any of these groups about what they'll do in 2021?
So a lot of what the marching crews do is dependent on the parades that they march in, and I think a lot of them have been waiting for official announcements from the actual parades. So we have not heard specifically from individual crews about what will happen, although there's little pieces of information starting to come out about who's doing what. The best place to find out is to go to the crew's website or Facebook page if anybody wants to find out specifically about what a crew is doing.
Now, I'm very curious because most of the photographs in this book, you have beautiful historical photographs as well, but most of the photographs from this book were taken in the 2020 carnival season. I don't know, it just sort of hit me as I looked at this book, how what we have, you know, what it was,
yeah.
And will it be the same again? And I wondered how you all felt about that when you finally finished the book and sat back and looked at it and realized what you had.
Well, we love the idea of the book being a snapshot of mm-hmm. this community at this time and this place. And we did have to go into some historical pictures to tell the story a little bit better. Like the camel toes, one of the things we thought was interesting about them was that they changed their costume each year, so we wanted to show several years' worth of costumes. But largely, the photographs are from the 2020 year, and in fact, the size and shape of the book is really like a yearbook, so it's fun to think about it as being a yearbook of marching crews.
And it's interesting to me that only the photographer Patrick Nidry is a native. The rest of you are transplants who fell in love with New Orleans.
For me, that's part of the magic, the exclusivity of it, the fact that you can come to a place, get your feet wet, and before you know it, you're full on, like I said, waiting in line at Jefferson Variety.
Right.
It's inclusive. You're welcome with open arms, as long as you bring a spirit of creativity and fun. And people really respect, if you show up in a costume or an outfit that clearly is homemade and clearly took some time and effort, people welcome you as if you've been here all your life. I have had nothing but love from native New Orleanians about the book and just about our participation in general.
What about you, Echo?
Well, you know, I'm still not a native because I've only been here for 45 years.
I know.
So everyone comes to New Orleans and comes to Mardi Gras in different ways, and you peel back the onion and you find different things each time you enter into that universe. And that's the beauty of it. And the welcomingness of New Orleanians is also what makes it so special.
So Yanni's talked about the crew of St. Anne. Echo, what's your favorite crew? What would you belong to if you could only choose one?
Well, you know, you never have a favorite child.
Oh.
I couldn't possibly say that, and I have to say, I am a really great audience.
There you go.
A good place for audience in this world, and I'm a very good one. I show up, and I cheer, and I love them, and that's a really important part of the carnival process, too.
Well, how do you place this, Echo? I'm interested in your theory of what this means as public art.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's most attractive about this work to me is how much creativity goes into it. And it's not creativity for your living room. It's really creativity to share with the community. Sharing is what it's all about. So it is a very public process, but there is the intentionality and the artistry and the, you know, the practicing to make sure that your dance moves are right or your look is correct or you got the right-heeled shoes or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the public part of it is what parading is about.
And I wonder what it shows our kids, you know, when they're out on the street looking at all this. It's so interesting to me that so many parades, say, are literary or take their roots from mythology and what that does in teaching kids about stories, for example.
Yeah. I also think it really shows them, like, you can do this. You can be an older mom and you have this group of people that you hang out with, that you have a lot of fun with. You're brave enough to stand on the street and perform for people. It's empowering.
It's a brand new day. killing speculation. It's a brand new day, with a brand new creation. It's a brand new day. Don't sing no nursery rhyme. It's a brand new day in time. Brand new day. Don't want no drama. It's a brand new day. Forget all my mama. It's a brand new day. New music we create. It's a brand new day. About to change the whole nation. It's a brand new day. Opposition we finish it. It's a brand new day. Put it down and diminish it. It's a brand new day. Boy, yo, I'm lot of him. It's a brand new day. Say shots, yeah, butter rim.
Patrick Nidri joins us now. Patrick, welcome to The Reaving Life.
Thanks so much for having me, Susan.
Now, it's so great. Most of the photos in this book, and we should say there are some photos, historical photos too, but most of them were taken during Mardi Gras 2020, which seems like a lot of work. So talk a little bit about how you and Ryan approached trying to cover so many groups.
Yeah, it was certainly an ambitious thing that Echo had laid out for us, and she wanted to get the entire book shot in one Mardi Gras, and originally had gone with the idea that she could just have me do everything, but when I looked at the list of crews that she was trying to get photos of, I realized pretty quickly that this would be more than just a one-person job. So thankfully, Ryan, who's a tremendous photographer and a good friend of mine, was able to come on board, and we had a pretty elaborate spreadsheet that detailed all the different crews and told us where they were all going to be at what time, all put together by the great producer Echo. And, we pretty much covered them all just by going to the different parades and, looking out for the marching crews.
Now, it seems to me that photographing people in motion requires a kind of special skill. So talk about that literal moment when you are chasing down a crew or waiting for a crew or trying to capture a particular person in a crew?
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge, especially during Mardi Gras when there are just thousands upon thousands of people all over the place, and people are in that kind of mode where they want to be in the front row and they don't want to let you get in front of them. So it certainly involves a little bit of elbow work, if you will, just to make sure that you have the room to catch it. And then on top of that, you really only see these crews come by for a split second. So my plan usually was to go to the start of the parade, take some photos there, go down to the middle, and then take some more photos, and then end up at the end of the parade. So it was a lot of shooting, a lot of moving around on the bicycle, and in the end, basically taking shots of each one of the crews several times in each parade.
Well, they're also photogenic and they're also bright. You know what I mean? It's such a colorful book. And you had to work to capture that in daylight and in the evening as well with night parades.
Yeah, absolutely. So getting into the technical aspect of it, we usually used for the nighttime parade some supplemental lighting just because you do want to highlight those colors that people are bringing out. And if you just rely on the available lighting that there is on the street, you're going to end up with maybe some duller colors and maybe a little bit of too much motion blur. So both Ryan and I shoot with additional flash, and that really helps those colors pop.
And what was the hardest parade or the hardest group to photograph?
That's a great question. I would have to say, just in terms of the physical challenge of it, probably Crew de Vue, just because the entire route is so jam-packed with people. I mean, it's nearly impossible to get to the front of the parade route. So Crew de Vue certainly was the most challenging, but at the same time, the most rewarding.
And what's your favorite photograph in this book?
My favorite photograph from this book was one that came from the crew of Chewbacca's, where we had a little photo studio set up out on the parade route, and found a pink Wookiee who was on stilts. So he was probably about 8 feet tall, and he walked by me, and he kept walking, and it was right before the parade, so I had to run down the street to get him, and he was so generous. He came back all the way to the photo studio, and we set him up on a teal backdrop with his bright pink outfit, and he really worked the camera for us. So even though it wasn't in the middle of the of a parade, it still was probably my favorite portrait out of the whole bunch.
Oh, it made me laugh out loud when I got to it. I mean, there is something about a pink Wookiee that is so adorable. I've been talking with Echo Olander, Yanni Goldstein, and Patrick Nidri. the creators, along with Ryan Hodgson Rigsby, of I Wanna Do That, the magic of Mardi Gras marching cruise. It's about as much fun as you can have without actually hitting the streets. Thank you so much, all of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thrilled to be here.
Thanks so much for having me, Susan.
Have inspired some surprising songs. Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side takes its title from the 1956 novel Walk on the Wild Side by Nelson Algren. It's the story of a Texan named Dove Linkhorn who drifts to New Orleans, although Lou Reed used characters from Andy Warhol's Factory in the song. Some of the novel's most memorable passages are Algren's three rules of life: never play cards with a man called Doc, never eat at a place called Mom's, and never sleep with a woman whose troubles are worse than your own. The version you're about to hear is from New Orleans' own A.J. Loria.
Eyebrows on the way and shaved her legs, and he was a she. They said, hey baby, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. And she did, she did, she did. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the street for soul food and a place to eat. He went to the Apollo and you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey baby, take a walk on the wild side. All right, he said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. All right. From out on the island, in the back room she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, though, even when she was dipping. They said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side.
support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.